offer something a bit different for this series of podcasts. Life Between the Vines visited Chicago last month for the Alsace Rocks event. There's not enough great things you can say about these fantastic wines. So here we offer interviews with four winemakers growing each of their family legacies in wine. In fact, they do rock Alsace. Next, we offer podcast number 337, featuring Melanie Pfister of Domaine Pfister, a name very close to us here at the podcast. Be sure to watch her video on our YouTube channel. This is pretty exciting for me personally because I am here with Melanie Pfister, and she's with Domaine Pfister, and of course, that's my last name, so this is thrilling. Thank you very much for being here today.
Please, you lost a P.
It fell off somewhere along the line. So I'm going to get into this right away because briefly you talked about it during the seminar, and that is being a woman winemaker. In the end, it doesn't matter. You're a winemaker, and that's all that's important, really.
Exactly. It's a job that you do by passion, and whether you're a woman, a man, it doesn't matter. You have to be passionate about what you do and to make it as you want it.
And how long have you been a winemaker?
11 years now.
Okay. Well, that's a good long period of time. So you've seen a lot already. I mean, I know there's more to come.
Sure. I have the future still in front of me. But 11 years were enough to see different vintages, different kind of vintages, and warm, cold, very, very healthy, more with rot, and so it's a good experience already.
Has there been a vintage so far that had you nervous? I mean, literally thinking, I'm not sure where I'm going to go from here.
No, I was pretty confident, and still am. So
that's a good thing. How long has your family been making wine?
Since 1780, so I'm the eighth generation.
And that puts a lot on your shoulders, doesn't it?
It's not that heavy, because it wasn't an obligation. So I do it by pleasure and with pleasure.
So was there a point as you grew up or before you got into the business that you weren't going to go into the wine business, that you were going maybe a different direction?
I was rather in an optic of doing research in biology, which is not exactly the same thing, but which is not far away because it's biology and it's physiology of vines and yeah.
I've met many winemakers that were going to go into medicine, into science, into chemistry. Yeah. So it's really not all that unusual. It does seem to have a parallel line, doesn't it?
Sure.
Yeah. But there was no time that you really thought, you know, winemaking was not for me.
But it was also not the thing that I never thought, okay, I will be a winemaker. It took me time to really be aware of what I wanted to do. Because when you're studying at high school, it's too early. You just study, you enjoy what you study, and that's it.
So about how many cases are you producing? Roughly.
We produce some 5,000 cases a year.
Okay, so you're relatively small.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Which is nice and pretty interesting because small estate means kind of management of everything. So I'm involved in the vineyards, in the winery, in the sales,
so
like today.
Very hands-on. I'm going to go back into the woman winemaker just for a quick trip here, and that is, so many times we've heard people talk about the idea that women having more taste receptors. Is that something you believe in?
It's been proved, so. But, I mean, regarding wine tasting, it's also a lot of experience that makes your palate more accurate, and that's probably the biggest difference between a non-professional palate and another one. Of course, you have abilities from scratch, and then it's a work.
Is there a part of the process that you enjoy more than anything else? I mean, is it walking the vineyards? Is it when you're blending? Any of that?
Yeah, sure. Working in the vineyard is a pleasure because you're in the in the countryside, you're just in the nature, not disturbed by any phones or everything, and that's really peaceful. I mean, of course, some periods are quite stressful, because nowadays in May, June, when it's growing like crazy, we make really long, hard days to do the debedding, trellising, but it's really interesting. And then harvest is a period where it's really exciting, because it's everything, the work of a whole year is played at this time, and that's really interesting.
Everything comes together, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You said something that intrigued me when it came to blending, secret blending.
Mm.
So you really don't reveal what the blend is. Never. Interesting.
Hmm. And even when we taste, when we make the blend with my parents, we never see numbers at first. We taste blind, 15, 20 samples that we prepared prior to the tasting. And then we just go finer to find the real blend. But from the beginning, we don't know what's in that bottle or in this one.
So it's very honest. You can't get any more honest than that, can you?
It's true. It's what we feel and what we like.
You talked about in the seminar the noble grapes of Alsace. For our listeners, what are those grapes?
There are four noble grapes, or what we used to call the noble grapes. This is Muscat, Riesling, Pinot Gris, and Gewürztraminer. And those four noble could be either planted on a Grand Cru area to be a wine named Riesling Grand Cru, Muscat Grand Cru, or those could be also Vendange Tardive or Sélection Grenoble. So the sweeter styles of Alsace. Pinot Blanc, for instance, you will never see any Pinot Blanc Vendange Tardive. That's forbidden. Mm. It's only allowed for those four noble grapes.
Interesting. When you do these blends, do people try and pry it out of you to find out what the grapes are? Not that I'm suggesting I'm going to try and pry it out of you, but it's intriguing to me.
Sure, but we know we always have those four grapes, because that was an hypothesis that we had from the beginning, and then we just want to have the best one out of the vintage. And that makes the difference between blending in Champagne, where a non-vintage would be always the same. Here we want to make the best one of the vintage. And the composition changes every year.
That makes a great deal of sense. Walk through the process of harvest to bottle, just in a short synopsis, with the grapes that you make, the grapes that you grow in Alsace.
Winemaking is a kind of easy process. Pneumatic press, everything is harvested by hand. We have a team of 25 pickers coming locally. Everything is whole cluster, pneumatically pressed, which is standard nowadays. Cold settling during 24 hours, and then fermenting with indigenous yeast. Fermentation will last several weeks to several months, depending on the vintage, on the grape variety. And then the wine is aged either on the gross lees, if the quality is good, if you feel it, and or the wine is racked after fermentation and aged on fine lees, during at least a small year. That means bottling happens generally just before the coming harvest. The 2018 will be bottled in August 19. And for some of the wines which fermented a bit longer, those will be bottled after 18 months. And so kind of very gentle winemaking, no intervention. The single additions we do is sulfites.
Good. That gave me an idea. Thank you. For the time you've been making wine, I'm sure you've done plenty of interviews. Talk to the press. What is the question that you don't get asked that you would like to be asked?
Well, tough question. People often have And that's true even for professional people. But regular customers, though, our private customers coming home, they either see the part of winemaking or being a vigneron is harvesting. They see us at the tasting room, but they are not aware at all of what's done in the vineyard. And the focus on vineyard is underestimated. I mean, 80% of the time we spend working is in the vineyard, for the vineyards. People are not aware that vine is able to grow from 10 to 15 centimeters a day during these times. It's the hardcore of our job, and very often just people are not aware of that. They see the winemaking, the tanks and everything, but what's done in the vineyard is often not taken seriously. And still the quality, primary quality comes from the vineyard.
Well, wine is made in the vineyard, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. You'll never be able to make a good wine from bad grapes. You could do a correct wine, but to make it outstanding wine, you need very good grapes.
Yeah, that's a very good answer. Thank you. Now, in many wineries around the country here in the United States and in parts of the world, people have had difficulty with labor, getting labor, because it seems that the crop of, so to speak, of workers are thinning. Is that an experience you've been having at your winery?
So far, I touch wood, we're lucky. During harvest, we've 25 people, mainly retired people, because our harvest period is pretty long, is very punctual. So we pick this day and then we stop for 3 days and we pick again. And so we need flexible people, and those retired people are just perfect for us. And for that was for seasonal, and then for permanent workers, we have a small estate. We do farm 10 hectares, 25 acres. And so I have two permanent workers, plus me and my father who work in the vineyard. So we're enough, but I know that it's a major problem for many, many of the winemakers nowadays.
Do you see growth at all in terms of the property you farm, or are you comfortable staying where you're at, and how do you feel about that?
There's a growth. Every year, there are dozens of wineries just stopping, in Alsace even. So the hectares are still farmed by neighbors or so. So there is a concentration phenomenon, which is normal, I would say.
No machine harvesting at all, though, I'm guessing.
Not for me, but it's allowed for all the Alsace appellation. Not Grand Cru, not Crémant. And not late harvest or those sweet wines.
But machine harvesting has gotten a great deal more sophisticated, hasn't it?
Yeah, they improve. And I mean, on a vintage where with no rot, kind of homogeneous maturity, harvest could do a good job, I think. But the thing is that when pressing, then you don't have whole cluster anymore. You have just berries. And pressing just berries is like mashed potatoes. It's more, you don't have this draining of the stems, which is important to me.
Obviously, I was very impressed by the aged wine that you folks brought along on this particular trip. Do you keep a great deal of that in the cellar?
Sure. Having an own library is really important, because it's history of these days, and we have to keep. And I was lucky because my father started to keep bottles from the end of the 60s, and that was pretty from small families. Like we're not Trimbach or Hugel with this history and this tradition, but my father started pretty early, and that's great.
What a thrill to taste those wines I mean, you've got to kind of stick your chest out going,
we're doing the right thing here. Of course, and we're proud of that. Because when we, and even not coming from Grand Cru, but classic, nice vineyards that we have will age for ages. And that's incredible.
Yeah, it is. In a situation like this, you had a lot of good questions after the seminar, I thought, but do you find it a challenge to promote Alsace? Because they're fabulous wines. That's all there is to it, especially what we tasted today. But there are so many wines and so many wine-growing regions, and the competition's growing every day.
Sure. It is challenging. It will be challenging for the coming years, definitely, because Alsace is a small region, small production, image that is not that's not suited to the quality of the wines that we produce now, and so we have to promote the region.
Right.
When we go on tour like this, we're not promoting only our wines, we're promoting the region, because the whole focus must be made on the region.
Sure. And availability of your wines in the United States. About how much do you export to the United States, and is it countrywide or specific areas?
It is our main export market, and we have a national importer, Vintage 59, who distributes everywhere nationally.
Okay, so it's available pretty commonly.
Yes.
Okay. And do you have a tasting room at your winery at all?
Yeah, we have.
And for our listeners who want to learn about you online and perhaps come visit you, what is your website?
The website is www.domaine-pfister.com.
Well, maybe one day you'll spell it correctly.
No, sorry, I'll take that off.
Melanie, this again, I'm just tickled to be able to talk to a winemaker with the name Pfister on a bottle. It's a thrill, and I thank you for coming to the States and for your taking a little time with me today.
Please, it was a pleasure, and it's still a pleasure to meet people enjoying the wines and being aware of the quality of Alsace.
Learn more at domaine-pfister.com, spelled with a P.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak and Catherine Shearer. Copyright 2019.